Good afternoon. I'm Jeff Beckwith, Executive Director of the Massachusetts Municipal Association, and welcome to the 12th COVID-19 Municipal CEO Briefing, being hosted by the MMA, but being provided to all of you by the Baker-Polito administration. We apologize for the late start for this program. We're just trying to assemble all of the speakers and coordinate, and we're running a few minutes behind. I apologize for that. And as we work to connect with the Lieutenant Governor, who will provide the overarching remarks and guide us through the administration's briefing, while that is happening, it's our pleasure to once again have Sean Cronin, the Senior Deputy Commissioner and Director of the Division of Local Services here. He'll provide an update on Chapter 92 of the Acts of 2020, which is the latest bill to assist municipalities in navigating and managing and governing during the COVID-19 public health emergency. Sean, thank you for being with us. And if you could update us, that would be excellent.
Sure. Pleasure to be here, Jeff. Thank you. So this bill and been in the works for a few weeks now, and I'll just highlight a couple of the provisions. We do have on the DLS website a section-by-section summary along with a link to the bill, although I'm not positive that the bill is up on the legislative website, but we have a link to it.
There's also a link on the MMA website as well. So.
Okay. And we'll also be getting the guidance out, a DLS bulletin on this, working with the AG's office, because a lot of this is election and town meeting related. So we hope to have that out shortly. So a few highlights. Municipal elections are extended. There's a few sections in there that push the date out further than they previously were in the original election bill. Quorum requirements for town meeting, Section 7 reduces that. The town can choose to have a quorum equivalent to 10% of the existing quorum. Remote town meetings is a possibility under Section 8. Section 9 allows for a community to have a town meeting actually outside of its geographic boundaries. So that's something communities can take advantage of. Section 10, we had talked about this on previous calls. I'll mention Mayor Vigent from Marlboro, who brought this to my attention. Section 10 allows communities, if they so choose, with a vote of their select boards or city council in the city. And if you have a dedicated source for a stabilization fund, if you remember in the Municipal Modernization Act a few years ago, communities are able to dedicate a certain portion of non-property tax revenues, think of meals tax, lodging tax, to a general purpose stabilization fund or a special purpose stabilization fund. So this provision, Section 10, actually allows a community to suspend that automatic dedication for fiscal 21, thereby giving making those monies available for general fund purposes. So it's an option for communities to help with the fiscal 21 budget. And I'll also note that it does cover any of those types of funds that were created previously under a special act, because as you know, it wasn't until municipal modernization that was generally available, and communities had established these funds through special acts. So it covers any of those acts that might have been done via special legislation. Just a couple of others. Section 11 covers city budgets, so mayors now have extended time to submit their budget. I believe it's by the end of July. The mayor has time to submit his or her budget. And then the last thing is the so-called contracted services, which I know has been an issue that has raised many questions. We received a number of emails in our shop here. But basically, if you look at sections 12 and 13, there's a process laid out that allows communities to pay for certain education-related contracted services, even if they weren't fully delivered per the original contract. So there's, you got to read the provisions to understand what the process is and what's allowed. But it does address that issue, which has been out there, I think, since the end of March, beginning of April. So it's now codified in this act. So those are the highlights. And again, there's a section by section on our website, and we're working with the AG's office on a bulletin that will address the specifics of the bill. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Sean. We appreciate all the work and technical expertise that you provided to the legislature and the administration's support and for signing the bill as quickly as possible. We are now joined by the Lieutenant Governor. We deeply appreciate Lieutenant Governor Karen Polito's leadership throughout this entire crisis and all of the work and coordinating the reopening process. And so, Lieutenant Governor, welcome, and the floor is yours. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much, Jeff. Thank you, Sean. And I know we have Secretary Theoharides on to talk about a lot of the outdoor activities that are allowed now throughout our Commonwealth, which is exciting. This has been another challenging week. I just want to thank everybody on this call for what you're doing. And we could not have a safe and successful reopening of our economy without you. You're doing great work. I look forward to, at the end of these remarks and hearing from Secretary Katie, what you're hearing from businesses and people in your community about the kinds of activities that they're taking part in, how your businesses are incorporating the safety protocols into their workplaces. I look forward to hearing from you on that. Just on that note, I just also want to thank everyone in the healthcare arena, in the front line for getting us to this point. All of the hard work allowed the metrics to show the health data that we wanted to see in order to activate phase two, which was announced last Saturday by the governor, as everyone knows, and to have the positive test rate and the number of patients hospitalized continuing with that downward trend was really important and will be very important to continue to monitor as we reopen, as we continue to reduce the spread of the virus and want to roll into more activities in the phase three category. So with that, you have been receiving, thanks to Jeff and the MMA team, the guidances in advance, including driving schools, which are now open. I'm the mother of two teenagers, one who successfully was able to get his permit before the COVID hit. So we were one of those lucky families, but we're now introducing the driving schools and will soon have up the ability to access learner's permits for the tranche of students that have been on hold during this time. So that's all coming out in the next couple of days. You have received the guidances on libraries, our beloved libraries, and the ability to work through the circulation desk and the curbside process for that activity. And again, Sean is on the call for more municipal related questions should those come up, and we'll hear from Katie in just a few minutes. I wanted to also just again repeat that the phase two guidance for youth and adult sports, that was a topic that we've talked about a lot on this call. Obviously youth and adult outdoors, youth indoors for facilities and camps, pools, playgrounds and spray decks, and the campgrounds and summer school. While we started some personal services at the beginning of phase two, in a couple of weeks, hopefully if the data holds up, we'll be able to activate more personal services. We just want to look at how things are going as we reopen. I mentioned the driving and flight schools, occupational schools and test centers, and I mentioned libraries. All those guidances have come out. The driving school safety standards, they are limiting class sizes to not exceed 40% of the maximum room occupancy with the 6-foot spacing. There is also online learning and remote participation to replace classroom instruction, so a lot of innovation there. and you can read those more specifically. Obviously, reducing the amount of sharing of materials, daily logs, cleaning protocols, all of those things are asked of the driving schools to have in place. I did touch briefly on the libraries. If you have questions about that, I can get into that as well. And I think, as many of you know, while we have been able to put into these phases certain industry sectors, there are businesses that just don't fall into squarely a box of an industry sector. And so we have general business guidance that every business has to meet in terms of the minimum standard for opening. And we've outlined that as well. So if you, as a local official, are trying to determine how this one business fits, at least you have the guidance for general business reopening that you can use as a way to understand the basic things that this workplace needs to incorporate into their operations. Katie's going to talk a little bit more about the adult sports and youth sports leagues, just focusing on, which you may talk about, the age, why we've used the age of 18 as a factor in deciding. The public health people would tell us that outdoor is optimal, and then youth being less impacted in terms of the virus is also something that they took into consideration, and that's why allowing youth activities outdoor and indoor and limiting adults indoor was one of the recommendations that they had for us. And Katie will get into that a little bit more. I know that we can talk about other guidances that are coming out, the summer school one, which we talked a little bit about last week, is available, and it gives us an opportunity to use the summer school as a way to think about fall in terms of the kinds of protocols that will need to be in place for fall reopening. And I think a lot of people are asking, are these guidances what will be determinative of a fall reopening? And they are not. These are the guidances that the public health officials working with DESE have outlined for summer school and will be adjusted and studied further for the fall reopening. So you will be hearing more from us around what that will look like for fall. I just wanted to talk about something that's non-COVID, and that is MassWorks. We all love this program and know how important it is to local economic development. And I would just like to acknowledge that the 2020 round of MassWorks is now open, and the program guidelines and the RFP and the application template are now live on the Executive Office of Housing and Economic Development's website. Applications are due a while from now, so you have time to think about how a MassWorks grant could assist you in terms of recovery and in terms of getting some of those projects that were front and center for you and for us back online. And those applications are due the close of day on August 28th. So we're looking forward to working with you there and using some of these capital dollars to help get our economy up and running, and also help you determine what those projects are locally that we can assist you with. So at this point, I'm just going to close out and turn it over to Secretary Katie, and then I look forward to our discussion.
Thank you very much, and we thank the Secretary for being with us. Lieutenant Governor, I just want to mention that while you were first raising driver's ed schools and being able to reopen with guidance, a driver's ed car pulled up in front of my house, and by the looks of at the failed three-point turn, these schools could not have reopened fast enough. But now, turn it over to the Secretary. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff, and thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Great to be with all of you today. As I spoke with you, I think it's always hard to remember, but maybe 2 weeks ago, about our outdoor guidance in phase one, we have taken a very similar approach to phase two, trying to get as many outdoor activities safely open so that there's a diversity of opportunities, equitable access, and a balance around letting outdoor businesses open and continue to contribute to local economies, as I know that they do. So I can go through this at sort of a high level, go through some of the detail in each of the different activities, and then I'm very happy to take questions. I'll start with beaches, which is obviously a key topic of interest to many right now. And luckily these resources have been open throughout the pandemic and are opening, continuing to open with additional amenities as we go forward. Much of the beach guidance has stayed exactly the same as it has, as it was in phase one. We still have the 12-foot distancing between beach blanket areas. One thing to note is that no contact ball games such as catch are now allowed in phase two. They weren't allowed in phase one. Competitive organized sports like a soccer game on the beach that are organized and official are still not allowed in phase two. We also heard a lot from, particularly from municipalities, as well as some industry folks about compostable toilets. And so we are allowing compostable toilets to operate in phase two and think they are a good option here. Again, all of this is to the discretion of beach managers in terms of how they manage their toilet facilities. And we do have guidance related to best practices for bathroom cleanliness at the same location on the EEA website and the reopening website. Turning our attention to swimming pools were not open in phase one and really it wasn't the season yet for outdoor swimming pools, but starting in phase two, all public and semi-public swimming pools can reopen, but indoor facilities are only reopening to supervised youth sports and summer sports camps. And again, this is to the Lieutenant Governor's note on the way DPH looks at this. You know, the safest thing is outdoors, the next safest thing is youth. And so we are allowing youth to use indoor facilities both for sports leagues and for pools, recognizing that many summer camps are reliant on indoor facilities, particularly in cases of bad weather. By and large, many of the public pools, Commonwealth and municipally owned pools are outdoors and those are allowed to operate. We are asking pool operators to look at the loads in terms of ensuring social distancing can be maintained on the deck areas of pools. And we're saying that capacity should not exceed 40% of the existing pool facilities capacity, but pool operators are allowed to go below that, obviously, if they feel like that number doesn't allow for safe social distancing. Hot tubs and whirlpools, we are asking for those to remain closed in phase two. We are looking at face coverings being worn sort of when you're queuing up to come in and if social distancing is not possible on the deck, but obviously they should not be worn in the water. So some of this seems like common sense, but we do feel at times that we need to just be very clear and to say things even when they seem like common sense. Locker rooms and changing areas will be closed in phase two. And again, that's an effort to continue to allow for social distancing, but there will be access to showers. There are DPH regulations in terms of showering off before you get into a pool. And so both showers and restrooms will be open. Swim lessons are something that really can happen in phase two, but a swim coach with a swim team is allowed to practice with their team. And that is the idea that in a swim team situation, it's not an instructor up close with children who are learning how to swim. So that, unfortunately, it's something we're looking forward to doing. We have a great program through DCR that offers free swim lessons, and it's something we want to get going again, but it's not appropriate for phase two at this time. Parks and open space. Many of these have been open, as you know. Athletic fields and courts and other playing surfaces are open for non-organized use. This is something like shooting baskets, doing drills, that kind of thing would be allowable. High contact sports are not allowed to have games at this point, and that's consistent with the youth and adult sport league guidance. We're also expanding activities to include park cleanup events and community service projects, which is a great way to get folks outdoors working in their community. And then outdoor educational programs, outdoor public art installations, and outdoor fitness classes like yoga can happen in park spaces at this point. Again, limited to 10 participants, and any shared equipment would need to be disinfected. At this point, large gatherings and events such as concerts and plays, et cetera, are not allowed in this phase. A big change here, and something I know a lot of kids are chomping at the bit for, is playgrounds. This is one that makes me particularly happy. I know people are, people have different opinions on playgrounds, but I think it's a good opportunity to get particularly our young kids back outside. There is not a lot of evidence to support too much concern over transmission from the surfaces. And so it's really more about parents being able to keep their kids distanced and adhere to guidance related to masks and proper hygiene, washing hands before and after coming to a playground and not coming when they're sick. I know a lot of municipalities are preparing to open their playgrounds and spray decks on a rolled out schedule, and that's absolutely fine. You should do what makes sense for your community and make sure you feel like you have what you need in place before you open. DCR's playgrounds, in coordination with the City of Boston, are opening next Monday, because that's when Boston is opening Boston playgrounds. And so we thought it would be simpler, since most of our facilities are in the City of Boston, to do it in a coordinated way with our local partners there. Campgrounds are opening to tent camping. That was something that wasn't allowed in phase one. Indoor visitor centers, rec halls, and fitness centers should remain closed. And then the associated amenities with campgrounds, like pools and mini golf and tennis, just need to follow the guidance that has been put out on those types of things. Those are allowed at campgrounds with the distancing and face covering rules. And the last thing I'll remark on, and the Lieutenant Governor covered this really well, so I won't spend a lot of time on it, but we were pleased to reopen outdoor adult and supervised outdoor and indoor youth sports starting in phase two. It is available for in high contact sports for practice only. Sports like tennis are allowed to do regular competition, where competition would not put folks at risk of contact. Basically the idea is leagues can come together to practice, to drill, and to get ready for upcoming competition in phase three. And I would note that for sports that take place on larger facilities, whether it's a football field or a hockey rink or a facility with multiple basketball courts, a group of 10 stays together, and that's the group of 10, but you can have multiple groups of 10 as long as they can be spaced. Each group of 10 can be spaced 20 feet apart. And so we are recognizing that some teams are large and will like to have that team atmosphere of having the whole team together, even if they're sort of podding in a 10 person limited way on a portion of the field. It also allows us to use a facility for multiple practices at the same time, assuming the distance can be maintained. And as I mentioned, large group gatherings and tournaments are not permitted in this phase, but is something we're looking at for phase three. So I will stop there and I'm happy to take questions. I just really wanted to express to this group how valuable all of your input has been here. It's been really terrific to continue to hear about the different challenges and issues you're grappling with and what you're hearing from folks in your community. And I look forward to continuing that conversation.
Thank you, Secretary, very much. And this is an enormous amount of activity that that has been processed in a very short amount of time, all of this guidance and all of this thought, and we appreciate it very much, especially for outdoors. I thought, Lieutenant Governor, perhaps since people are, they know the drill and we're doing questions through the chat function, there are a few that have come up already for the Secretary. Maybe we could go right to those before we start on the general questions. Is that good to you?
That'd be great.
Great. So, and just to let folks know, if you haven't seen the chat and opened it up, there was a discussion back and forth between some folks who were just wondering about the speed of opening up even basketball courts just for shooting, just of the concern that that might lead to more, you know, like games taking place and so on. So communities are being very thoughtful about this. Here's a question from Western Mass. What about the state and local parks in Western Massachusetts? We don't have ocean beaches, but the picnic areas are easy to social distance. We have many ponds and rivers out here. There should be a way to have facilities open with cleaning more often by staff and so on. So, and then also a question about museums. This must be a question potentially from North Adams and the thought about museums coming up in the next phase.
Great. So we definitely at DCR have inland beaches open and recognize just the great diversity of parks we have in Western Mass. They have seen really high attendance the past couple of months. I've been out a couple of times to various parks in the western portion of our state, and certainly our DCR parks out there are getting great use. We are opening restrooms on a rolling basis as we get all of the our seasonal staff lined up, as well as the protective equipment we need, but that is going well. And so I think the large portion of our facilities are now online across the state, and we will be continuing to do so around beaches that haven't really officially, you know, they haven't officially opened for the season in terms of lifeguards and things of that nature. But we do encourage all of you to feel confident in opening up inland beaches. Picnic facilities are allowed to open. We are asking for tables to be spaced to allow for distancing, but we are not requiring that tables be cleaned between each use. We did not feel like that was something either we or municipalities had the staffing to be able to ensure. So we are asking users to try to clean before they sit down and just to, you know, use good hygiene. But this is something where I think it's a common sense precaution that people can take if they're concerned and clean their hands after getting up. And I believe so outdoor museums and sculpture gardens and zoos and botanical gardens, things of that nature, and historic sites, outdoor areas around historic homes are open in phase two. I believe indoor facilities, we are looking at phase three for indoor museums, indoor historic sites, that type of thing.
Oh, thank you. There was a question earlier. I believe the guidance was issued on spray parks. Yeah. And is the guidance similar to, was it issued in the, remind me, in the pools or in the playgrounds?
It is in the playground section, and so are outdoor adult fitness areas, outdoor playgrounds for adult, or adult playgrounds, if you will, which are also allowed to open.
Great. Thank you. And then the spray parks guidance is located on the state website. And also we have links to it on the MMA website. So it should be easy for anyone to find. Here's a question about large gatherings and concern over the 4th of July parades coming up. A question about how long you think that the cap on gatherings will happen. I know this is outside, but communities are very concerned about guidance and decisions when potentially 1,000 people can show up outside and social distancing would be extremely difficult to achieve.
Yeah, I think I might let the Lieutenant Governor speak to this one. I think this is part of a broad conversation across the reopening board.
Yes, the gathering order is still in effect with the 10-person number for confined spaces. And a lot of people ask about that. What is a confined space? And as you've heard from the public health folks, indoor, where there's less ventilation and circulation of air, is definitely a confined space. And that's why, as we've rolled out certain activities, there's been a strong emphasis on outdoors. So how does the gathering order apply to outdoors? The outdoors, for instance, with outdoor dining, a lot of the outdoor dining spaces are incorporating umbrellas and tents. The order does say that the space, if it has a tent and an overhead covering, needs to have circulation of air. So for instance, the downward flaps could not all be down because then that would be confined. But if I think it says 50% of those flaps are open, it allows for the air to circulate in that area. In areas outside, it says that people can gather, but in outdoor areas need to be mindful of social distancing, wearing face coverings, and follow the social guidance for outdoor areas that are not in a confined space. And that order will, you know, we will continue to evaluate the data and determine when it can change further. But there is, it has been refined, so you should read it so you understand how it's applying to this phase of reopening. But it also does remain part of our strategy around reducing the spread, you know, maintaining these good public health metric numbers and also reopening. So it's a balance.
And Lieutenant Governor, we appreciate that you have left a lot of discretion up to municipalities. It's still a difficult call for communities on these large events. From the MMA's perspective, a large event that would have 1,000 or several thousand people, a parade where it would be extremely difficult to have social distancing would be a something for communities to think very, very hard and long about, even if technically it's a it would be possible underneath the revised order on gatherings and the guidance on events. So,
yeah. Jeff, if I could just say, this is Mike Kana from the governor's office. It is hard to name everything that is allowed and everything that isn't allowed. But yeah, a parade by its very nature is in the category of things that is designed to bring large groups of people together. And that is still prohibited in the order that was reissued this week. That type of, you know, a street festival, a fair, a road race, a parade would be like that too. There are, you know, exceptions for First Amendment rights. Everybody has to sort of recognize that. So it specifically recognizes, you know, the right for political expression. Those are balancing acts that everyone's going to have to make. But by its nature, just a civic celebration of the 4th of July would be something that, because it is designed to bring large numbers of people together, is still prohibited. But as the Lieutenant Governor said, that will be evaluated as the public health data comes in. And I just don't know what the calendar will be for liberalizing those rules.
Right. And right. Communities have to make their decisions now. So,
right. The way we're thinking about it as a land manager from DCR's perspective or around fishing and hunting tournaments and things of that nature is, you know, while it's obviously okay to have many more than 10 people at a beach or a park, bringing together people at the same time and place for the same purpose is what creates the difficulties and the risk here. And those are the things we are not doing right now.
Right. Thank you. Thank you for the clarification. It's very helpful, and communities have been looking for that clear guidance. A couple of questions more for you, Secretary. One is asking a question about the wiping of not just playgrounds, but also the picnic tables, because in some places there's mention of the need to clean and other, so that new information about picnic grounds and so on, not having to have municipalities or the state clean after each one. So looking for a little more specifics on that. And also there's a question on how often frequently playgrounds should be cleaned.
So we did remove, and I noticed this in the chats, that you are correct. We had guidance about wiping down tables in phase one. We did remove that from phase two. The CDC said on relative to playgrounds that sanitizing wood chips or wood structures, other playground structures, was probably a waste of resources, and so they do not recommend that type of practice for playgrounds. I think the key thing with playgrounds is good hand hygiene for folks who are using that, and that's really the key.
And then a sport I have not played, but that just shows either my age or my being an old timer. Pickleball. We have had several questions on indoor pickleball and whether or not that's allowed for groups of under 10.
So indoor facilities for adults are not open in phase two. And so that's been a decision that's been made across the board for sort of fitness type activities for adults in phase two are not open indoors.
Thank you. And then the organized softball, baseball tournaments, and so on. Question is, will players from out of state be able to participate, or would that be those be limited to in-state competitors?
So I think that will depend on where we are in terms of the public health data and what decision has been made on the quarantine. You know, right now we have guidance that folks coming in from out of state should quarantine for 14 days. So I don't see the quarantine guidance would have to change in order for out of state interleague play to happen. And so I think that will depend on where we get to with that guidance.
And then finally, for questions for you, we have one on hand washing and hygiene is the practice of relevance to play structures. But in the there still is, regardless of wooden, now there still is guidance on cleaning plastic and metal and other structures and cleaning those on a daily basis, at least.
Yeah, I believe, and I don't want to get this wrong, and Sean Pierce, if you're on there and have it open by any chance, I don't want to get it wrong. I do know we speak to cleaning these type of surfaces, I believe, daily in the guidance, but we can confirm that. I can chat that back to the group after when others are going.
And again, the guidance is posted clearly, and I think that's a question where we could just say, recommend that folks who want to know that, who are on this call, just go to either the MMA website or the state website and get the guidance, and we'll provide it.
I'll send the link around in a moment in the chat just to remind folks, and I'll try to pull the answer. I know I was involved in writing this one myself, so I should remember, but it's not coming to me at the moment.
Right. Great. Thank you. And then here's a question which I will.
There we go. Someone's posted it.
Oh, good. All right.
High touch surfaces, yes, made of plastic or metal, should be cleaned frequently. But we leave it broad in terms of the cleaning. Soap and water would work here. Disinfectant would work here. Again, we don't think, you know, based on the CDC's guidance, disinfectant is inappropriate for wooden surfaces, but for those metal and plastic surfaces, we do recommend frequent cleaning.
Thank you. And then there was a question about whether or not the picnic table guidance under EEA was the same as for restaurants, and the answer I believe is no, that the restaurant facilities do have a standard of cleaning each table after use.
Yes, and that's obviously very easy for them to do compared to a park.
Yes. Thank you very much, Secretary. I think we have time now for a few more questions that are not directly related to outdoors, but if you can stick around in case more come, that would be
sure.
Excellent.
Happy to.
We do have a couple of questions. I see Sean Cronin here. I'll provide an answer on one of the questions, which is any updates on the status of Chapter 90 funds. It would be helpful to get going on this work. We know the administration is very anxious to sign a Chapter 90 bill. The good news is the Senate appears to be working on a standalone $300 million Chapter 90 authorization for cities and towns, advancing that now in the Senate process. The House had earlier adopted, as part of the $15 billion transportation bond bill they passed, $300 million for Chapter 90. So we're working very hard. If folks on this call can contact their senators and encourage them to move that bill quickly, and then their House members to have them go along, that would be excellent. And I see the Lieutenant Governor has unmuted herself. I'm sure she wants to weigh in on this one.
My phone. I'm happy to see that money come. I've always said to everyone here that the earlier on in the year that you get those funds, the more you can do. There's clearly the ability to do projects around town, around your cities. We've done that at the T and the MBTA during this slower time period. We've been able to proceed with a lot of construction projects, and it's been very helpful. I know how valuable these funds are. We want to get those into your hands as soon as the legislature will allow.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Here's a question. It sounds like a Sean Cronin special. As you know, the issuance of demand bills for delinquent real estate tax bills is the starting point for the tax-taking process. Since the town adopted the movement of the real estate tax bills due from May 1st to June 1st, when are the demands legally supposed to be issued? We also adopted the extension of the bills issued with due dates after March 10th, which means if we issue demands on June 15th, if anyone pays before June 30th, we will have to forgive a demand fee, I think. Could you confirm when communities would be able to move forward with demand notices based on the town's adoption of that statutory flexibility?
If I could ask whoever sent that just to send it to our COVID-19 email box, and I'll have one of our attorneys answer that. I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head.
So Leon Gallman did, and we will copy that and send that into you.
Yeah, perfect. Then we'll get an answer right away.
Excellent. I saw, let's see if there were more questions. Another one for Sean. If and when cities receive COVID-19 Federal CARES Act money in response to our submission for reimbursable expenses, when the money is received back by the city, is that subject to further appropriation by the city council? Or does it just go back to the city's emergency COVID-19 fund and be spent again on COVID-related issues?
So it doesn't need to be appropriated, but it does need to be accepted under Section 53A as it is a grant. So whatever the local process is for acceptance of the grant, that's what needs to be done. So in a city, I believe city council just needs to accept the grant, but there's no appropriation of that grant.
Thank you very much. I will scroll up for further questions. There were several questions just related to basketball and concern over one basketball just shooting basketball being too tempting and potentially having pickup games. And then another question regarding what the vision is for when actual games outdoors and indoors would be allowed.
Sure. So we did look at this issue and really feel that it's important to allow access to basketball courts for shooting and for getting folks outside. There isn't really a replacement that works if you play basketball, and many people don't have a hoop in their driveway or so lots of reasons to try to open it. The governor, being a basketball player, did speak with a number of youth who said they would be happy to go and shoot around and not engage in a game, but just having the access to the court to be able to practice their skills, to be able to do drills. With any of this, we know it won't be perfect. There may be things that don't go, there may be the occasional pickup game, but the goal is really to have clear signage about what is allowed at basketball courts. And so that's something I would encourage municipalities to do. This is really going out, shooting hoops, working on your skills, doing suicide sprints if you want up and down the court, but not engaging in an active high contact game. I forgot the other question.
It was okay. All folded into one. So thank you very much. A couple more questions on the CARES Act money. So we're switching back to Sean, which is when will CARES Act grant money be sent to communities that completed their application by June 5th? And when will the next round of grant applications take place? Then there's another question regarding CARES Act funds being available. Is there an update regarding their being available for use to supplant or replace revenue? And the issue is that's still before the federal government, and there's no indication of when the Senate will act on legislation that has been filed that would allow CARES Act funds to be used for that purpose, although we are pushing, MMA and the National League of Cities and others are pushing for that flexibility. But Sean, the question is when communities would receiving their CARES Act funds and when the next round would take place.
All right, for those that have submitted and they haven't had any follow-up questions and they would have received that follow-up question from ANF. So if you haven't received any follow-up questions, or if you haven't, you answer them and the application's been approved, the money actually was just wired out today. So you should be seeing it within a couple days in your treasury account. So that's great. In terms of the next round of applications, well, remember that this one closes this Friday. There was a 1 week extension granted. And then the next one, there isn't a hard date yet, but it would be at least as of right now, because if you recall when Undersecretary Hornby was on previously, there's still a lot of question marks around the program and how it ultimately might play out. So absent any significant changes in the program, the next round would probably be in the October-ish timeframe, October-November timeframe.
Very good, thank you. Lieutenant Governor, and someone is just asking to confirm that the additional CARES funding round can be applied to FY20 expenses as well?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. And are you aware of when the non-entitlement CDBG grant decisions, awards, and notifications will be made once those are processed?
I don't know the answer to that, no.
There is, the answer I'm sure is embedded in the hour-long webinar that's posted on our website as well, but the answer does not come to mind immediately, but there may be an FAQ or something that we can find to answer that question.
Well, I will make sure you get that. I don't know the answer to that either. It's been something that's come up a couple of times on this call, and I will get that over to you, Jeff, so you can disperse that information.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Lieutenant Governor. And for the first time ever, we have, I think, covered all of the questions in the chat, not run far behind, even though we had a late start. So I'll turn it back to you to see if you have some closing remarks.
Well, thank you. I appreciate this time. There it will be questions that do arise between now and our next get together on Tuesday of next week. So just let us know what we can help you with so you can continue to make decisions. I thought what Sean talked about in terms of the CARES Act funds being wired today was really good news. And we're happy to see those dollars get into your hands. And hopefully the feds will be able to do a little bit more for our communities. And I just want to acknowledge that a lot of decisions have to be made around schools. That is definitely at the top of the list of things to sort through with our friends over at DESE and with our superintendents and local officials. So much more to come on that front. And we will continue to monitor, you know, how the reopening is going, you know, what we hear from you, what we hear from businesses, what needs to be adjusted online in terms of clarity for guidances, our FAQ list, all those things do get adjusted as matters come to us that need to be addressed specifically. And when that happens, we'll get that information out to Jeff so he can keep you informed. I think in an uncertain time, the best that we can do is all do our jobs and try to be as clear as possible when we are making decisions and providing you with information so that you can make the best decisions as well. So just thank you. I look forward to talking with you next week. And in the meantime, if you need anything, just reach out to Jeff and we will continue to work together.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor, and we thank you so much for your partnership with local officials across the state to provide real-time information and resources. Just today, in terms of answering all the questions about the reopening process and guidance for municipalities and resources for municipalities, further information on the CARES Act, a discussion of the MassWorks grant program and the moving forward. The Secretary Theoharides just posted a note that that the administration is extending the MVP action grant application by 1 week. So it's now due next Thursday. So you're providing flexibility, resources, information to cities and towns through this crisis. We appreciate it very much. And we invite everyone who's participated in this briefing to join us again next week for what will be the 13th COVID-19 Municipal CEO Briefing. The MMA will once again host, but all of the information and briefings will be provided by the information. We thank you, Lieutenant Governor, and all of the officials who joined us today to provide information directly with municipalities. Until we see you next week, we hope everyone takes good care. Be safe, and thank you for leading your communities. Bye.
Bye-bye.